watched me move this back and forth all evening, if you came early. I'm not sure if I can remember my outline tonight. A degree of, I have a lack of confidence, so if you don't mind, I'll use this here tonight. I wanted to take some time this evening, and I wanted to talk to you about sort of the thoughts that are running through the mind of the staff sometimes as we meet. And I think that if I were to talk to you maybe about where our thoughts are and what we're thinking, some of the changes that have perhaps been proposed will make more sense to you. And so what I'd like to do maybe tonight is just talk to you about sort of where we're thinking and where our mind is focused. And essentially, I think a place to begin is to say that in every age, and this is certainly one of those ages, the church has always had to adapt to some degree to cultural pressures. Now, when you do that, you're not compromising the gospel. You have to preserve the message. Now, there are churches that compromise the gospel, and they ought to be ashamed of themselves because they dishonor God when they do that. But every church in every age has, to some degree, had to listen to what the culture has been saying to them and make some adjustments, and probably never more so than our age because changes come in such a rapid way. Now, the church has had a really long history of being able to make those adjustments. As culture changes and as the culture presents a new challenge for the church to address and in some ways incorporate into the life of that body, the church has always sort of been able to make that adjustment to some degree. I was thinking about three of the changes that have happened over the last, 50 years or so, and how in practically every church that I'm aware, it began as a cultural shift, and the church responded to that cultural shift. I think one of the changes is the cultural shift regarding the demand for comfort and convenience. And that came out of the generation that came up after World War II. You had the Great Depression, World War II sort of ended the Great Depression. And after World War II, America began to financially prosper. And as America began to financially prosper, Americans began to make demands for comfort and convenience that had not been there before, that the church sort of had to adapt to. For instance, you go back into previous to the 1950s, and many of you were there, you know better than I do. Larry, you're there. And you're there, but know better than I do. But think about how rare air conditioning was. You know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s in a house that didn't have air conditioning, and I think we were in the 25% that didn't. Well, it wasn't that Dad at that point in his life couldn't afford air conditioning, but we had the big ceiling fan. Not the ceiling fan, but that fan, you turn it on, it sounded like an air conditioner, and it would bring in the air from outside. What's that called? I don't know what that's called. An attic fan. We had an attic fan, which meant that, on those hot summer nights, you were laying there, without your sheet on, and it was brutal. And then about 11, 12, it started to cool off, and by about 3 o'clock, you had to put the blanket on, and you woke up, and on the hot summer days, it was great till about 11 or 12, and then from about 11 to 10, it was pretty hot in the house. But, we were living like that in the, 80s and 90s in this house. Most people, I think, probably lived like that before the 50s. I mean, air conditioning was a luxury. I remember, I think, one car Dad had that didn't have air conditioning on it. But, there wasn't the demand for the luxury. I mean, you don't have to have air conditioning. I remember hearing a brother, Rodney Williams, who pastored a long time in Ohio, Middletown. In fact, I believe Brother Collins, who will be preaching our camp meeting, pastors the church that he used to pastor, Rodney Williams. And I think I've shared this before, but he preached a great sermon. Rodney's probably in his 80s, and he talked about things you think you need that you don't need. And he went back basically into his life and talked about all the things he grew up without. Had a funny line. He said, "I didn't grow up with three bedrooms and a bath. I grew up with three bedrooms and a path, you know, to the outhouse." And he said, "You don't need indoor plumbing. You don't need those things. And you don't need air condition." But as America began to prosper, there was a great demand for comfort. And you have padded pews. You have, I don't know, about $100,000 sound system. That's what we want to hear. And I mean, you can imagine a pastor getting up and saying, "No, listen. For 1950 years, the church didn't need air condition and padded pews and sound systems. For 1950 years, Jesus didn't have air condition. Apostle Paul didn't have air condition. I didn't grow up with air condition. Air condition cost this church about $20,000 a year. Think what you could do worth $20,000 a year, and we pay it for a luxury that we don't even need, that we didn't even grow up with." Think about that. Say, "I want to go back to the good old days. We're getting rid of the padded pews. We don't need them." Have you ever been to Haiti? They don't have air conditioned padded pews. They don't have sound systems like we have. They don't have that stuff, and they're happier than we are, and we just need to not have all the comforts. They're in the way. Well, you can say that, but the culture has spoken. And you try to have a church without padded pews and sound systems and air condition and all the other modern conveniences that we have, that's going to create quite a dilemma for you as a church. And so the culture said, "Hey, we're getting richer. America's getting richer. We want comforts. We're accustomed to comforts." And the church has largely had to cave and provide the comforts that people want. You think about consumerism. I read a statistic this week which is staggering. And this comes from Thom Rainier, who is a very highly regarded person. He said, right now in America, 90% of people who go to church, 9 out of 10 people who attend a church of 400 or more people. Only 1 out of 10 people in America. Now, there are a lot of churches that are under 400, but only 1 out of 10 people who go to church in America go to a church of less than 400. You say, "Well, what's going on? Why would a church of 400 and plus, and you got the rise in the mega churches, why would they be putting the small churches to some degree out of business?" Well, they're putting them out of business for the same reason that Walmart put mom and pops out of business. That's what's going on. What you saw in the economy in the 80s and 90s, and even back to the 70s, with downtown closing and the super center rising up, that's essentially what's going on in the church world today. And the reason that people go to larger churches is because they like one-stop shopping. The reason you go to Walmart is you want to be able to get your groceries. You want to be able to get you a swimsuit for the beach trip coming up in a week. You want to shop for the TVs, and you want to buy some spark plugs. And you don't want to go to 4 stores. And everybody complains about Walmart not hiring enough cashiers. But you still go to Walmart because you like the convenience of being able to get all the stuff that you need under one roof instead of going to 4 different stores. That's how Walmart put people out of business. Well, in a large church, there is the ideal that you've got a thriving youth group, you've got a thriving children's program, you might have a thriving recovery program, you might have a gym, you might have a daycare, you might have Sunday schools, small groups, parenting classes, parents' day out. The ideal is that you have all that, so whatever you have in your family, the large church is sort of viewed as the Walmart that we can provide that. And what happens sometimes is people will say, "Well, you know, I would go to a small church, but you know, they have a great children's program, but they don't have much of a youth program now." And it's hard when you have 150, 200 people to be strong in every area. And what happens is the large church is pushing the smaller churches out of business. And that's a rise. That's a statement from the culture. And it's a very alarming statement. It puts a lot of pressure on small churches. It puts a lot of pressure on large churches to, because you feel the pressure of the consumerism. You feel that coming at you. Take one more. I'm just talking in general now here. One of the things that has happened in the last 30 years that has put a lot of pressure on the church is the outsourcing of education. I remember growing up on the church pew. You had Sunday school, but then Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, you sat there with your parents. And the parent was the primary spiritual teacher of the kids. And so you might have your little Sunday school, but basically you sit there and you hear what everybody else hears. And the ideal is you go home and ask your parents questions about what the preacher was preaching about. And you're sort of learning along with your parents and maybe being instructed under the tutelage of your parents. But the parents were the primary teachers. The church would provide maybe one opportunity for the kids to have their own thing week. That's changed. What has happened in the culture is that essentially what parents do to the school is now done to the church. We outsource the teaching. We send our kids to the professional teachers, and the teachers might send back some homework that we can work with. But the teachers are their primary educators. Parents aren't the primary educators. And essentially what the culture now does is it outsources Christian education to the church. And so, you know, it's interesting that in-house we've been talking about children's church as many of you have heard, we're launching, you know, sort of a redo in September, and we plan to move to the youth room to have more space. And we've sort of gone back and forth, and we've talked to, I think, a lot of you. We would like to have the kids at the beginning of the service because we could get more accomplished with an hour and 20 minutes or an hour and a half. You can incorporate live music. You can do small groups, and you can do a lesson. We'd like to have them from the beginning of the service, but parents, at least at this moment, tend to want to have their kids there for the music part of the service. And so what's going to happen is we'll probably continue to dismiss, and instead of having them for an hour and a half, we'll have them for 45 minutes. But it's interesting that in that conversation, nobody's asking the question, well, maybe we just don't need to have children's church. Maybe we need to go back and just have Sunday school and get rid of all the children's programs except for Sunday school, and the kids can just be with their parents for all three services. Nobody's talking. Nobody's saying that, because we all know that can't be done. The culture puts too much pressure on you. If anything, you go back to the convenience factor, and the parents are saying, it's not going to be very comfortable or convenient for me to have my kid with me for every service, every moment. I want some alone, time. I can't focus if I'm babysitting. So we're going to have to provide that service. Nobody's saying we can go back to the way it was 40 years ago where the kids are with the parents. Everybody knows you're going to have to provide the Christian education. But again, where does that come from? That comes from a cultural shift. The culture has got into outsourcing all forms of education and put real pressure on the church to provide spiritual education as the school provides the didactic education. And so, to some degree, the culture does put pressure on the ministries of the church. Now, I want to share four changes with you very briefly, four more changes. Those three that I mentioned are sort of back there. The four that I'm going to mention, one is ongoing. Three are probably new. They've arisen in the last 10 years. It's going to be very interesting to see what they do to the church over the next 20 years, because they're going to make their mark in the church they already are. The first major change that is happening, and then I want to talk to you about what our response would be to that. First major change that's happening, and started probably 30 years ago or so, is the changing of the week for American families with kids. And I've talked to many of you about this, so if I have, just zone out for just a few minutes. What has made more of a difference to the church in the last 30 years than any change is that Americans with children, their weeks no longer look the same. As you go back when women, or particularly mothers, were primarily out of the workforce, you had mothers at home, you had fathers working, and what happened in that situation was the mother was home, the house was sort of getting cleaned, give or take, kids were getting bathed, everything was getting worked out, so Saturday was the day off, and Sunday was the worship day. So the American week of the American family was Monday through Friday, mother's doing this, father's out there working. Saturday is the fun day. Saturday's the day off. Sunday is the day you give to the Lord. But as women begin to go into the workforce, and that's not the only issue there, but as you had now two income families with children, what goes on Monday through Friday? House ain't getting clean. Things are getting passed, passed up. Mother, father are working 40 hours a week. There's a lot of stuff not happening at home. So now you come to Saturday, and Saturday's not exactly a day off anymore. Saturday is catch up. The work that should have been done maybe previous to Monday, on Monday and Friday, it's now getting done on Saturday. Throw in the plethora of sports, and that's another cultural issue. The rise of the sports over the last 30 years. And essentially, at the end of Saturday, you don't feel refreshed. You feel worn out. Get up on Sunday morning. You really want to sleep in. You come to church on Sunday morning. And you know what? You go home and you had lunch. And you're 20 hours away from Monday morning. And you haven't had a day off yet. So where do you get your day off? You get it off on Sunday night. And so, essentially, when you had a one-income family, Saturday was the day off, Sunday was the day of worship, but now Saturday is the catch-up, take the dog to the vet, get the house clean, get everything changed, get the laundry done, get the oil changed on the car, get the grass mowed, run the kid to the two sports, collapse, get up on Sunday morning, grunt your way maybe to Sunday school because you're wore out. And then you come in on Sunday, and now Sunday has to be the worship slash relaxation day. You know, you go back to this church in 1985, 303 people. That was the average AM attendance in 1985, 303 people. The average Sunday school attendance at this church in 1985 was 306. So there were three people that didn't like the preacher in 1985. They came to Sunday school. They just went home. And those of you who are here remember that. What this changing dynamic has done is it has cut Sunday school and Sunday night by 40 to 50% in a generation. And you say, how do we go back? Well, how we go back is women quit their jobs and go home, start cleaning the house Monday through Friday and doing all the other stuff so Saturday doesn't become a work day. And I'm being facetious, but again, you understand that it's not going to be so easy to reverse that trend. Culture has spoken. And what that demands of us then on this one issue, and this one issue has done more to affect Sunday night and Sunday school than any other issue, because Sunday now has to be a day off plus a worship day, where it used to just have to be a worship day. More than anything else, what you're going to have is flexibility. People's schedules are tight, and you're going to have to find the times that work best for them. One of the things that this church has done that's really out ahead of a lot of other churches is it has become much more flexible in even recent years. Think about Celebrate Recovery on Tuesday night. That's a better time. It's a more flexible time. It works for more people. You know, sometimes you look at Sunday night and you say, well, where is Sunday night going? We're averaging 160 people on Sunday night. But I would say that Celebrate Recovery is averaging about 55 people on Sunday night. And there's very little crossover. Very few of the people who attend here will go to CR. There might be about 10 people. Actually, our night services are still around 200 people. They're just broken up between Sunday night and Tuesday night. And that's probably going to be a long-term trend in many ways. Again, Sunday is having to be the day off slash worship day. And until the culture shifts back, it's going to be a difficult endeavor to try to rebuild it back to where it was 30 years ago. Again, that is a cultural shift that has been sort of pushed on us. You think about, secondly, the distance learning trend. I mean, what's the biggest thing going on in education right now? Last 20 years, is the biggest change in education? Computers, yeah. Yeah, but computers, yeah, that's true, create distance learning. I can learn in my home now. It's online learning. I mean, you look at the colleges that advertise, and it's like, you get your online degree here, right? It's online. I think, actually, Jerry Falwell was the first to see this happening, and I read an article a while back that said Falwell was the first major college president in America who saw that education was going to go online. And he was out ahead of it, and that's how Liberty built. Liberty has about 16,000 students on campus. They have about 110,000 students online, Liberty University. 100,000 students online, only 16,000 on campus. You think about that. And that's where education is going. Now, you think about that in terms of Christian education. What does that mean for Sunday school? I mean, if the trend is online, what does it mean for being in class? There's a girl named, I won't give her name. She'll probably hear this sermon. You know who you are, though. And every now and then she sends an offering over here. I remember a couple times, Karen Knight is said, hey, do you know so-and-so from North Carolina? They sent a donation. And it's like, all right. I don't usually get told who gives a donation, but that's sort of interesting and wanted to know if I had a connection. And very smart girl, very godly girl. She goes to church like many 20-somethings one time a week, but she'll listen to 2-3 sermons a week. She has 2 or 3 favorite preachers, and she'll listen to their sermons from the previous Sunday when she works out or when she's driving. And that's the trend. And I think if you were to talk to her, she would say, you know, you ought to find a Sunday school. I think that she would look at you and say, as many, many in her generation would, and perhaps rightly so, I listen to 4 sermons a week. I listen to 1 in person, and I listen to 3 online. Why should I go and sit in a classroom to hear a lesson that I can hear online? I mean, I can multitask. I'm busy. I can run. I can drive. And I can do it all together. And so when you think about even education, it's all going online. It's all going distance. And again, what does that mean for a church education? It's going to present a challenge. Going to present a challenge. In fact, I think, Walt, do you mind if I share? I think Walt's ahead of the, Walt's light years ahead of the rest of us. He leads an online Bible discussion over the phone with, 7-8 people? Okay, so it's a Bible study, but it's over the phone now. Yeah. What does that mean again for the church? It really informs a lot of what we're planning to do, because essentially, to some degree, we're going to have to compete with the online issue. That's going to present itself in the under 40 crowd. But what I think you're going to have to do with any class for it to have a chance to grow and to go forward, and it's just my estimation, but it's what drives some of our thinking. I want you to understand how we're thinking. The class is going to have a component that can't be replicated online. If everything that happens in the class can be done online, they'll do it online. And so, for instance, the parenting class. You're thinking about how are we going to do a parenting class? Whatever we do, it's got to be something that can't be replicated online. Why would they attend our parenting class when they could watch James Dobson's 13-part series? That's the question. Or listen to James Dobson when they're working out. And so you want to have that component where Todd Akin is lecturing, but he's also going to take Q&A for 30 minutes or something like that. So it's like you can hear a lecture, but how many chances do you get to sit with a great pediatrician and just ask him questions for 30 minutes? You can't do that online. There has to be a support group component to that group that can't be done as effectively online. We got to come together. We got to support each other. We got to be in conversation. We're parents coming together. And again, it's going to be hard to do that online. What else have I got here? Again, the accountability groups. One of the things that makes Celebrate Recovery so effective is the 1 hour of share time. You have the meal, you have worship, you have either a testimony or you have a lesson, but then you have the 1 hour of open share time where people can get together and they can talk about what's going on and they can reinforce each other and comfort each other and be there for each other. And again, it'd be very hard to replicate that through distance. As you think even about classes that you build, if it's just about teaching, it'll be done distance learning. It'll be multitask while they're driving or while they're working out. And again, that's the pressure that the internet puts on us. And the younger generation who's very, very technologically advanced, they can find it online. So that is sort of, it's changing even the format of how education is done everywhere, particularly in the church. Two more. One is the online trend, period. So you talk about distance learning. One is the online trend, period, where essentially things that used to be done in person are now done online. I remember back when, and I know I've shared this with some of you, I remember back when going to the mall was a big deal. In fact, I read a poll and it was a poll of teenage girls in the late 80s, and the number one activity they enjoyed was going to the mall. I mean, it used to be a great deal for us to go to the mall. We didn't get to buy anything, but we got to look what we didn't have, you know. And it's a big deal. You get out there, you feel it, and you meet people, you interact. You go to the mall, you might see a pretty girl, you might see somebody you know, there might be something going on. But just the atmosphere of going to a store and shopping was an activity that you enjoyed. Now, what was the latest news? 8,600 more stores are closing, JCPenney. You know anything about that? I'll pick another. Sears. but you think about it. As JCPenney, Sears, these big stores close, what's growing? Amazon. Everybody buys it on Amazon. Now, here's the thing. If you buy something on Amazon, You are missing out on the experience. So why would you buy it on Amazon? Well, convenience and comfort. I can get a better price. And the experience is nice. It's nice to go to the mall, but I'll trade that experience for a better price and convenience. So Amazon is what, two or three times as valuable as Walmart now? It's nuts. I mean, Amazon's the way to go. You just think about that. At what point, and I'm afraid to ask this question, at what point will the worship experience no longer be valued? If people no longer like to go to a store and try things on, I mean, if people no longer value that experience, how far is it back until people no longer value this? I mean, you know, you got to get dressed, you got to go at 10 o'clock, you got to park, you got to get in, you got to get out. Just easier to watch Charles Stanley at 9:30 in your pajamas. It's just easier to buy on Amazon than have to get dressed up and go to JCPenney. I don't know what the answer is to that. I know a lot of churches are, you know, making sure they stream their services online, and they're trying to get, they're essentially saying, hey, you can watch us from home because we're going to stream it online. You can stay home. I don't know that that's a good thing, because I think more people will come if you don't stream it. I'm sort of against streaming it because, I know the trend. But at what point will it become a necessity that basically you're just not going to get them there? They don't want to get dressed up. They don't want to fight the traffic. They don't want to come in. They don't want to deal with that issue. They don't want to have to listen to an hour and 20 minutes because they can zone out for the boring stuff. If they hear something they don't like, they can go get something in their refrigerator and come back. At what point will the desire for comfort and convenience and people who are media-driven anyway stop valuing this? Very daunting thing. One more. Talk about how two income families have essentially made Sunday worship slash the day off. You talk about how distance learning is changing the dynamics of how people learn. They're no longer choosing to learn in a class. They'll choose their own way through distance learning. Talk about how the online trend is changing everything. One more that is going to have an impact is the changing dynamics of retirement. Used to be that the backbone of your church, and for our church, it's very much still is, but again, will it always be that way? Used to be that the backbone of your church were the retirees. As the retirees would retire, they would go home, they would garden and play with the grandkids, and they would be in church 50 out of 52 weeks. A part of that was there tended to be one income and an average of four kids, and they didn't have money to go anywhere. Or the dynamic. You have one income and four kids, there's a good chance you're not going to retire with a ton of money to go do stuff. But now you got two incomes and two kids. People are retiring much more affluently. And when this next generation retires, you're not going to see them 50 out of 52 weeks. You're going to see them 30 out of 52 weeks because they're going to buy an RV and they've made good income and they're going to go out and they're going to spend some of their money before their kids get it. And so the backbone of the church, which was that retiree group that you could count on like a postman, didn't matter when, they were there. They were in town. They came. You're not going to have that backbone anymore because people are going to retire differently. In fact, I was looking. Let me find this. I printed this off because this is amazing. RV ownership is at record levels. Now, this is RV shipments, and I take that, that's RV. I take it that that's sales of new RVs. But in 2011, there were 252,300 new RVs sold. 5 years later, in 2016, there were 430,691 RVs sold, which is like a 70% increase in 5 years. And the number one age group buying the RVs are age 35 to 54. Now, I'm not blaming you. I'm not blaming them. I got to work on Sunday, so I'm going to throw stones at you. I realize you work hard. You work high-stress jobs. And you're going to vacation. In fact, there was an article a few weeks ago that I read. It said, in another 10 years, Easter will no longer be the big service that it is. They said, because there's such a trend towards weekending that any weekend where you're going to get 3 to 4 days off, people are going to vacation. And Easter tends to be a four-day weekend. And they said, you watch it another 10 years, and Easter is going to be like every other Sunday because of the vacation. And they said, really, the trend is towards Christmas Eve services, because Christmas Eve, more people are in town. It usually falls on a week night, so it's not a weekend generally. And that really the big service is going to come back into Christmas. And a lot of churches are already finding that to be true, I understand. But again, the increase as the next generation retires in retirement is really going to have a major impact on the church. And I don't know what you do about that. I'm around pastors and they say, well, you better get everybody giving online, because you get them online, get them automated, get them making automatic deposits so that when they're in Florida, the money's still coming out of their account into your coffers, because if they automatic deposit, they can travel all they want and you'll still get their tithe. But if they're gone 20 weeks a year, you're only going to get 30 weeks of tithe. Now, that's an awful thing to think. People would be like that, isn't it? But that's what preachers think about. How are we going to make a difference? You know, they did a poll recently, and they asked the people, how often do you have to go to church to be considered faithful? And the average of that poll was 3 times a month. It used to be 3 times a week. But in our culture, it's 3 times a month. And as we become more and more and more affluent, first it was the comfort and convenience. Now it's going to be the vacationing and travel. All of that can be sort of depressing if you think about it. It is trends. But the good thing about it is the church, who is courageous, has always been able to say, this is a challenge, this is a situation, this is a challenge that the culture has presented to us, and we accept the challenge. And I want you to know that these are issues in the culture that will continue to force themselves upon us. But with God's help, we're going to climb the mountain. With God's help, I know that it seems like these things could present a wind, but with God's help, we are well able to take on the challenges that we face. I want to read one passage to you, and you know it well, but I love the passage from Joshua chapter 14. And here's Caleb coming into the land, 85 years old. Verse 10, he says, and now behold, the Lord has kept me alive. As he said, these 45 years, ever since the Lord spoke the word to Moses while Israel wandered in the wilderness, and now here I am this day, 85 years old. And yet I am as strong this day as on the day that Moses sent me. Just as my strength was then, so now is my strength for war, both for going out and for coming in. And now, therefore, give me this mountain of which the Lord spoke in that day. For you heard in that day now that Anakim were there and that the cities were great and fortified. It may be that the Lord will be with me and I shall be able to drive them out as the Lord said. You compare that to the children of Israel in Babylon, where they laid down their harps and said, how can we sing with things the way they are? But I think that we need to be a Caleb church. We need to be a Caleb church. I don't think we need to sit around and say, you know, all this stuff's happening and it's hard to have a Sunday school anymore. Maybe it's harder. But we can still bring people together. We can still get people together. We can still make a difference in the lives of individuals. Culture may change some things, but we can respond. And I am convinced that we are, that we're going to go forward, that we're going to see things happen here that you don't think can happen. I'm convinced that you're going to see God work in ways that maybe you don't think that He can work. I'm convinced that we can take the mountains that the culture is presenting to us. And I want you to believe that. I want you to have confidence in that. I am more confident of that than I have been. Like the Lord is increasing my confidence in this. And I could go on and talk, and I could bore you, and I could give you another hour of things that are running through their mind. But the Lord, I think, is speaking into our life. The Spirit is active. And don't be discouraged. Listen, don't be discouraged. Be like Joshua, say, we are going to take the mountains. It's not going to be easy, but we are going to take the mountains that the culture is presenting to us. Amen? Amen. Will you stand with me?